A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hannah sent us this one, and I love this question because it cuts straight through the usual China equals cheap junk reflex. She's asking, look, we know there are Israeli interior designers who fly clients to China for a week and pick out everything. If she and Daniel wanted to do that, get their furniture made there, custom lighting, molding, architectural details, where do you even start? Is the quality actually decent, and can normal people afford it?
And the answer to the affordability question is the part that makes people's eyes go wide. We're talking 40 to 60% savings on custom pieces, even after shipping and VAT and customs duties. A dining table that would run you $4,000 from a local Israeli carpenter? $1,200 FOB from a factory in Foshan, plus maybe $300 in shipping. You still land at half the price.
The horror stories exist for a reason. There's genuinely awful stuff coming out of some factories. But the flip side nobody talks about is that the same province making the junk is also producing museum-grade pieces for European brands. The difference is entirely in how you vet the factory and how you specify what you want.
That's the thing Hannah's really asking. She's not asking, should I click buy on Alibaba and hope for the best? She's asking about the professional process, the one those interior designers use, and that process is surprisingly methodical. It's not magic, it's just a system.
Let's talk about that system. Post-pandemic, shipping costs have come back down to earth, roughly $2,500 to $3,500 for a 20-foot container from Shenzhen to Ashdod, down from $15,000 at the peak. Israeli construction costs keep climbing. The math has never made more sense for designers and architects to go direct.
Foshan and Shunde in Guangdong province, that's where roughly 70% of China's furniture exports come from. You can fly into Guangzhou, spend a week in a concentrated industrial cluster, and see more furniture manufacturing in 5 days than you'd see in a lifetime anywhere else.
Which is exactly what those Israeli designers do. They organize week-long trips, fly over with their clients, and walk factory floors. But here's what people don't realize. They're not showing up cold. The real work happens weeks before the plane ticket.
The designer sends CAD files, mood boards, material samples, finished specifications, all of it, to the factory weeks in advance. So when they walk in, there's already a prototype sitting there. They're not describing what they want through a translator. They're inspecting something the factory already built to their drawings.
That's the part that separates the professional approach from the I saw a nice sofa online approach. The prototype is the conversation starter, not the final product. You're there to say, this joinery is wrong, the stain is too warm, the foam density needs to be firmer. And you're saying it while standing in front of the thing, not typing it into a chat window at 2 a.m.
That brings us to factory vetting, which is where most people's eyes glaze over, but it's actually the most important skill in this whole process. You walk into a factory and you have maybe 30 minutes to figure out if these people can actually deliver. What do you look for?
I'm guessing you have a list.
I have a list. First, look at the floor. Is there overspray from the spray booth? If they're finishing furniture and there's lacquer mist all over the concrete, that tells you they don't control their environment. Sloppy environment, sloppy product. Second, check for dust collection systems. A factory that invests in proper dust extraction cares about surface finish and worker health. A factory that doesn't. You'll see sawdust piled in corners, and you'll feel it in the finished quality.
You're basically diagnosing the factory the way you used to diagnose a kid with a rash. Look at the symptoms before you trust the explanation.
Third, ask for client references, not their showroom photos. Ask which Western brands they've produced for. A factory that's done runs for European or American brands has been through the quality control ringer. They know what acceptable means in a market where returns are expensive and reputation matters.
Then there's the showroom versus factory floor gap. The showroom piece is flawless, but you walk onto the production floor and the actual units being packed for shipment look nothing like it.
The showroom piece was built by the master craftsman who's been there 20 years. The production run was built by the new hire who started last Tuesday. You have to inspect the production floor, not the showroom. Ask to see units that are packed and ready to ship. If they won't show you, that's your answer.
You've vetted the factory. You've inspected the prototype. You've walked the production floor. Now you have to negotiate. And this is where minimum order quantities come in. The dreaded MOQ.
For custom furniture, MOQs typically start at 10 to 50 units per design. But for first-time clients, a lot of factories will go lower. They want the relationship. They'll do 5 units, sometimes even 1 or 2 samples, if they think you'll come back with a full container order next time. Standard is 30% deposit to start production, 70% before shipment. You're not paying the full amount until the goods are built and ready to leave the factory. That gives you leverage. If the pre-shipment inspection fails, you're only out the deposit, not the full order value.
Which brings us to the quality control specification. And this is where I think a lot of people get lost. You can't just say, make me a nice sofa. You have to specify the wood species, the joinery method, the finish type. Otherwise, the factory defaults to whatever's cheapest.
The defaults are where the horror stories come from. You think you're getting a solid wood table, but the factory used Chinese rubber wood with a veneer that looks like oak. Rubber wood is fine for some applications, but it's not North American white oak, and it won't age the same way. You have to specify the species. You have to say kiln-dried North American white oak, moisture content below 8%. That sentence alone filters out the factories that can't deliver.
What about joinery? I assume dovetail joints versus staples is a whole conversation.
A drawer with dovetail joints will last 50 years. A drawer with staples and glue will last 5. You specify English dovetail, hardwood drawer slides, no metal runners. That's 3 lines in a spec sheet that completely change what you receive. And finishes. UV-cured lacquer versus hand-rubbed oil. The lacquer is durable and cheap. The oil is beautiful but requires maintenance. Neither is wrong, but you need to know which one you're buying.
The quality is entirely a function of how precisely you specify what you want. The factory will build whatever standard you set. If you set no standard, you get no standard.
That's the core misconception Hannah's question gets at. People think Chinese furniture is a quality category. It's not. It's a geography. The quality category is determined by your spec sheet, your factory vetting, and your inspection process. Get those 3 right, and you can absolutely get pieces that would cost 4 times as much from a local craftsman.
There's a case study. An Israeli designer who had a factory in Shunde produced a custom sofa. Italian leather, kiln-dried beech frame, 8-way hand-tied springs. The kind of construction you'd expect from a high-end Italian brand. The factory delivered it for 40% less than what local Israeli upholsterers quoted. Same materials, same construction, same quality. Just a different postal code on the factory.
That's not an outlier. That's the standard outcome when you do the process right. The savings come from labor costs and industrial efficiency, not from cutting corners on materials. A factory in Shunde that produces 2,000 sofas a month has automated cutting tables, climate-controlled finishing rooms, and dedicated QC inspectors. Your local upholsterer is one person in a workshop. Both can produce excellent work, but the cost structures are completely different.
Let's talk about what Hannah's actually asking. Can she and Daniel do this themselves, or do they need to hire one of these designers who specialize in China sourcing?
They can do it themselves, but I wouldn't recommend it for a first-timer doing a whole house. The learning curve is steep. You'll make mistakes that cost more than the designer's fee. The designers who do this regularly have established factory relationships. They know which factories specialize in which materials, and they've already made all the mistakes, so you don't have to.
The designer's fee is essentially insurance against your own inexperience.
That's exactly what it is. And a good designer will also handle the logistics, the freight forwarder, the customs documentation, the third-party inspection. You're not just paying for taste. You're paying for a supply chain manager who happens to have opinions about fabric.
If Hannah wanted to start small, say just dining chairs or just light fixtures, that's totally doable on her own. Start with one category, learn the process, then scale up. The mistake people make is trying to source an entire house worth of custom furniture on their first attempt.
One category, one factory, one container. That's the smart first step. And we haven't even gotten into the architectural details yet. The moldings, the lighting, the custom millwork, that's a whole other layer of what's possible.
We should dig into that. But first I want to sit with something you said about the 70% number, that Foshan and Shunde produce 70% of China's furniture exports. That concentration is actually the secret weapon here. You fly into Guangzhou. You're 40 minutes from the furniture capital of the world. You can visit 6 factories in a day if you plan the route.
The Canton Fair, held twice a year in Guangzhou, 25,000 exhibitors, is basically a curated catalog of every factory you'd want to meet. You can walk the fair for 3 days, collect catalogs and business cards, then spend the next week visiting the factories that impressed you. It's the most efficient sourcing pipeline in the world.
The infrastructure exists. The question isn't whether it's possible. It's whether you're willing to do the prep work. The horror stories come from people who skip the prep. The success stories come from people who treat it like a professional procurement process.
Which is exactly what we're going to walk through. The trip structure, the factory visits, the negotiation, the quality control, and then we'll get into the architectural details and the cost math. Because the numbers are surprising.
For Hannah and Daniel specifically, they live in Jerusalem, they've got Ezra, they're not going to fly to China on a whim. So the question of, can we do this through a designer who already makes these trips, is probably the most practical path. But understanding the full process is what lets you evaluate whether a designer actually knows what they're doing or is just charging a premium for a plane ticket.
That's the meta skill here. Knowing enough about the process to be a smart client, even if you're not running the process yourself. Let's start at the very beginning. What does that week-long sourcing trip actually look like? You've decided you want custom furniture from China. What's step one?
Step one is finding the designer who does this, if you're going that route. And these aren't hidden. There are Israeli firms that run these trips quarterly. They've got relationships with 15-20 factories across different specialties. One factory for upholstery, another for case goods, another for lighting. The designer becomes the project manager for a supply chain that spans 6 different facilities.
The trip itself is surprisingly structured. You fly into Guangzhou. Direct flights from Tel Aviv exist, though most people connect through Istanbul or Dubai. You land, and you've got 5 or 6 working days. Each day is typically 2 or 3 factory visits, maybe a showroom appointment in the afternoon. The designer has already sent specs ahead, so every stop has something to look at.
What I find interesting is the client's role on these trips. They're not just trailing behind the designer nodding at things. They're touching fabrics, sitting on sofas, opening drawers. The tactile part matters. You can't evaluate a chair from a photo any more than you can evaluate a mattress from a catalog description.
That hands-on piece is why the trip exists in the first place. If it were just about specs and CAD files, you'd do the whole thing remotely. But foam density, leather hand feel, the weight of a drawer pull, none of that translates through a screen. The trip is a sensory audit.
Who is this actually for? Hannah's asking if normal people can do it, and the answer is yes, with a caveat. If you're furnishing a single room, the trip probably doesn't pencil out. But if you're doing a full apartment or a house, the savings on a single custom sofa can cover your flights. Everything after that is pure margin.
It's not just for designers. There are ambitious homeowners who do this themselves. The difference is, they spend months prepping instead of weeks. They're on WeChat with factory reps at odd hours. They're learning to read a bill of lading. They're watching YouTube videos about wood species. It's doable, but it's a part-time job for 3 months.
The designer route compresses that into a week. You're paying for compression and for access. Factories that won't take a cold call from an individual will roll out samples for a designer who brings them 6 clients a year.
That's the relationship layer, and it's the part that's hardest to replicate on your own. A factory owner in Shunde who's done 20 orders for Israeli clients through the same designer knows what Israeli standard means. The electrical specs, the size constraints for apartment elevators, the preference for certain finishes. That institutional knowledge is worth real money.
The process is, find your designer, or commit to doing the legwork yourself. Prep the specs, fly to Guangzhou, spend a week touching things and marking up prototypes, negotiate terms, and place the order. Then the waiting starts, typically 8 to 12 weeks for production, plus 4 to 6 weeks for shipping.
That timeline is important to set expectations. You're not walking out of the factory with a sofa under your arm. This is a 6-month process from first email to delivery at your door in Jerusalem. The people who get frustrated are the ones who treat it like a shopping trip instead of a manufacturing process.
Which is really the thesis here. You're not buying furniture from China. You're commissioning it. Same as you would from a local craftsman. Except the craftsman happens to have a factory floor the size of a football field and a CNC router that costs more than your apartment.
You land in Guangzhou, and the first factory you visit is usually the one doing your biggest piece. The sofa, the dining table, the bed frame. The designer has already told them, we're coming Tuesday at 10, have the prototype ready. You walk in, and there it is, sitting under decent lighting, and your job for the next hour is to be ruthlessly picky.
Which is harder than it sounds, because the prototype is always impressive at first glance. It's new, it's custom, it's exactly what you drew. The instinct is to say, great, let's order 12. And that instinct is wrong.
That instinct is the enemy. You have to go at it like a building inspector. Sit on it. Open every drawer. Run your hand along the underside of the table, the part nobody sees. If the underside is rough and unfinished, that tells you they cut corners where they thought you wouldn't look. A factory that finishes the hidden surfaces is a factory that cares.
I've heard designers say they flip chairs over and look at the joinery from underneath. If the visible joints are dovetail, but the structural ones underneath are staples, you're buying a costume, not furniture.
And this is where the spray booth test comes in. I mentioned overspray on the floor earlier, but you also want to look at the spray booth itself. Is it a proper enclosed booth with ventilation and filters, or is it just a corner of the warehouse with a tarp hung up? If they're spraying lacquer in an open room, you're going to get dust in the finish. Every single piece will have tiny bumps. They'll tell you it's normal. It's not normal.
The factory tour is basically a forensic audit disguised as a polite visit. You are smiling and nodding while mentally cataloging every piece of equipment that's missing.
The equipment list matters. A factory with a 5-axis CNC router can produce complex curved moldings and carved details that a factory with only table saws and hand routers simply cannot. If your design calls for anything beyond straight lines and simple curves, you need to see the CNC machine. If they don't have one, they're subcontracting that work and you just lost control of your quality chain.
That's a red flag I don't think most people would catch. They'd see finished pieces in the showroom and assume the factory made everything. But subcontracting is common, and it means your spec sheet is being handed to a third party you've never met.
Ask the question directly, do you do all fabrication in-house, or do you outsource any components? If they hesitate, that's your answer. A good factory will proudly walk you through every station and show you exactly where your pieces will be cut, assembled, and finished. A bad one will keep you in the showroom and offer you tea.
The tea test. If the tea ceremony lasts longer than the factory tour, walk away.
That's actually not a joke. The factories that produce quality work want you on the floor. They want you to see the dust collection, the climate-controlled finishing room, the QC station where every piece gets inspected before packing. The factories that are hiding something want you in the conference room looking at catalogs.
You've done the tour, you flipped the chairs over, you found the dust collection system, or the lack of one. Now you sit down to negotiate. And this is where the MOQ conversation gets real. You said 10 to 50 units per design is standard. But what if Hannah and Daniel want exactly one dining table and 8 chairs?
For the chairs, 8 is probably fine. Most upholstery factories will do a run of 8 dining chairs for a first-time client, especially if you're paying the sample fee. The table, a single custom dining table, that's trickier. Some factories will do it, but charge a sample development fee of $300 to $500 that gets credited back if you order more later. Others will flat out say no. The key is to ask before you send the CAD files. Don't waste 3 weeks of back and forth only to find out the MOQ is 50 units.
The payment structure you mentioned, 30% deposit, 70% before shipment, that's standard, but what's the leverage point? If the pre-shipment inspection fails, you're still out 30%.
You're out 30%, which hurts, but you're not out 100%, and that's why the inspection timing matters. You don't pay the 70% until the third-party inspector signs off. If the goods fail inspection, you refuse the balance, and the factory is stuck with custom furniture they can't easily sell to anyone else. That gives them a very strong incentive to get it right.
The deposit is your risk capital, and the inspection is your trigger. No inspection sign-off, no final payment.
The inspection itself, you're hiring a company like SGS or Bureau Veritas. They charge roughly 2 to 3% of the order value. On a $10,000 order, you're paying $200 to $300 to have someone count the pieces, check the joinery against your spec sheet, verify the finish, and take photos of any defects. That is the best money you will spend in this entire process.
Because they catch the bait and switch. The prototype had Italian leather. The production run has something that looks like Italian leather but smells like a chemical factory.
The smell test is real, by the way. Low-quality bonded leather has a distinct chemical odor that high-quality full-grain leather doesn't. An inspector who knows furniture will open the box and know within 5 seconds if the material matches the spec. You can't do that from 6,000 miles away.
The quality chain is precise spec sheet, factory vetting, prototype inspection in person, production run inspection by a third party, and only then does the container leave the port. Miss any one of those links and you're gambling.
When you're gambling with a 20-foot container that took 6 months and $15,000 to fill, the stakes are not small. The designers who do this regularly have a saying, trust the process, not the factory. The factory is your partner, but the process is your insurance policy.
Which loops back to Anna's question about whether this is feasible for normal people. The answer is yes, but only if you're willing to be process disciplined. You can't skip the inspection because you're tired. You can't skip the factory visit because the flights are expensive. The shortcuts are exactly where the horror stories come from. We've covered furniture, but Hannah also asked about architectural details. Moldings, custom lighting, the stuff that makes a space feel bespoke rather than off the shelf. And this is where the sourcing story gets even more interesting, because the factory clusters change.
For furniture, you're in Foshan and Shunde. For lighting, you go to Zhongshan, about an hour from Guangzhou, and it's the global capital of decorative lighting. Thousands of factories doing everything from hand-blown glass chandeliers to integrated LED systems. For metalwork and brass fixtures, you're looking at Dongguan. And for architectural millwork, custom crown molding, paneling, stair railings, decorative grills, a lot of the same woodworking factories in Foshan also do CNC routing for architectural details. The equipment is the same. A 5-axis CNC machine doesn't care if it's cut in a table leg or a cornice.
The geographic concentration actually extends beyond furniture. You can do a single trip that covers furniture, lighting, metalwork, and millwork, all within a 2-hour radius of Guangzhou. That's part of why the week-long trip model works. You're not losing days to travel between regions.
The lighting piece is particularly compelling for the cost math. Hand-blown glass shades, custom brass fixtures, integrated LED designs. These are categories where Israeli suppliers charge enormous premiums. I heard about a Tel Aviv architect who sourced custom brass light fixtures from a Zhongshan factory. The factory created a new mold for $500, and the per-unit cost came out to $80. The local supplier was quoting $350 per fixture. For a project that needed 20 fixtures, the mold fee paid for itself on the first 3 units.
That's the mold math. If you're doing one fixture, the mold fee kills the savings. If you're doing 20, it's a rounding error, which is really the theme of this entire sourcing model. It scales beautifully, and it's punishing on singles.
That's the honest answer to Hannah's, is this feasible for us, question. For a single custom light fixture, no. Fly to China, pay a mold fee, ship one box, you'll spend more than buying locally. But if you're doing an entire apartment or house, the math flips dramatically. Let's actually run the numbers on that dining table we mentioned earlier. Custom dining table from a local Israeli carpenter, solid wood, good joinery, proper finish, you're looking at $4,000 easily. Same table from a Foshan factory, $1,200 FOB. Add about $300 for your share of a consolidated container. Landed cost in Ashdod, $1,500. Then add Israeli VAT at 17%, that's $255. Customs duty on wood furniture, depending on the exact classification, is typically 0 to 12%. Let's call it 6% on the $1,500, so $90. Total landed cost with all taxes and duties, roughly $1,845.
Versus $4,000 locally. That's a 54% savings, and that's on a single piece, assuming you're sharing container space. If you're filling a whole container with furniture for an entire apartment, the per-item shipping cost drops even further.
The math gets better as the order gets bigger, and this is where the freight forwarder becomes your best friend. A good forwarder consolidates orders from multiple factories. Your dining table from Foshan, your light fixtures from Zhongshan, your brass hardware from Dongguan into one container. You're not managing four separate shipments. The forwarder picks up from each factory, checks that the carton counts match the packing lists, and builds the container.
Container pricing has normalized. We mentioned it earlier. A 20-foot container from Shenzhen to Ashdod is running $2,500 to $3,500. During the pandemic, that same container hit $15,000. The shipping cost is no longer the deal-breaker it was 3 years ago.
Which brings us to customs documentation for Israel specifically. You need two key documents beyond the standard commercial invoice and packing list. One is Tudat Mifchan, the Standards Institute certification confirming the furniture meets Israeli safety standards. The other is Form A, a certificate of origin that qualifies your goods for reduced tariff rates under trade agreements. Your freight forwarder or customs broker handles both, but you need to know to ask for them.
The customs broker is a whole conversation we've touched on before. The DIY versus hire a pro decision. For a full container of custom furniture, hire the broker. The paperwork mistakes you can make as a first-timer will cost more than the broker's fee.
And that leads to the risk management piece, which is where I see people make the most painful mistakes. You've spent 6 months and $15,000 on custom furniture. The container arrives in Ashdod. You open it, and half the dining chairs have cracked legs because the factory packed them in cardboard boxes instead of plywood crates.
That's a very specific nightmare.
It's a common nightmare, and it's entirely preventable. You specify packaging requirements in your purchase order. Plywood crates, not cardboard. Foam corner protectors. Silica gel packets for humidity control. A container crossing from Shenzhen to Ashdod goes through multiple climate zones, and condensation inside the container can ruin a wood finish. These specifications cost maybe an extra $50 to $100 per order. Not specifying them can cost you the entire order.
The spec sheet doesn't stop at the furniture. It extends to how the furniture is packed, what materials are used, even how the crate is labeled. And this is where the third-party inspection earns its fee. SGS or Bureau Veritas doesn't just check the furniture. They check the packaging before the container is sealed.
They photograph the crating. They verify the foam corner protectors are in place. They confirm the silica gel packets are included. And they send you a report with time-stamped photos before you authorize the final payment. On a $10,000 order, you're paying $200 to $300 for that inspection. It is the cheapest insurance policy in international trade. Let's get practical. If Hannah and Daniel are listening and thinking, okay, we want to do this, where do they actually start tomorrow?
Start with one category. Don't try to source an entire house on your first attempt. Pick dining chairs, or light fixtures, or one sofa. Learn the process on a small order where the stakes are low and the mistakes won't bankrupt you.
That's the single best piece of advice in this entire episode. One category, one factory, one shipment. If you've never done this before and you try to coordinate six factories across three cities, you will drown in logistics. But if you source eight dining chairs from one upholstery factory in Foshan, you'll learn the entire pipeline. Spec sheets, factory vetting, negotiation, inspection, shipping, customs, without the complexity of consolidation.
Once you've done it once, the second order is 10 times easier. You know what a bill of lading looks like. You know how long customs clearance actually takes. You know which questions to ask the factory.
Second step, use the right platforms to find factories. Most people go straight to Alibaba, and that's fine for browsing, but it's not where the professionals do their vetting. Global Sources is better for verified manufacturers. And the Canton Fair Directory is the gold standard. 25,000 exhibitors twice a year, all of them vetted just to get a booth. Even if you can't attend the fair, the online directory lets you filter by product category and factory size.
Once you find a promising factory, don't just email them a spec sheet and hope for the best. Request a video call where they walk you through the factory floor. Live video, not a pre-recorded tour. You want to see the production line in real time, with workers and dust and noise. If they make excuses about why they can't do a video walkthrough, move on.
The video call filters out the trading companies pretending to be factories. A trading company has a nice showroom and a conference room. A factory has sawdust on the floor and a spray booth that's actively being used. You can tell the difference in the first 30 seconds.
Third step, and this is non-negotiable, budget for a third-party inspection on every first order. SGS or Bureau Veritas, 2 to 3% of the order value. On a $5,000 order, that's $100 to $150. It is the cheapest insurance you will ever buy.
The inspection isn't just about catching defects. It's about signaling to the factory that you're a serious buyer who checks the work. Factories that know an inspector is coming build differently than factories that know nobody's watching. The inspection pays for itself before it even happens, just in the behavioral change it creates.
The three steps are: start small with one category, vet factories through proper channels and demand a live video walkthrough, and never skip the third-party inspection. Do those three things, and you've already eliminated about 80% of what goes wrong.
For Hannah and Daniel specifically, if this is their first time, I'd say find a designer who specializes in China sourcing. There are Israeli firms that run group trips quarterly. You join a trip that's already happening. You benefit from the designer's existing factory relationships, and you learn the process by watching someone who's done it 30 times. The designer's fee is tuition.
If you're a designer listening to this, the group trip model is worth considering as a service offering. You bring 4 or 5 clients to Guangzhou twice a year, you negotiate volume pricing across multiple projects, and the trip costs get amortized. It's a real business model, and the demand is there.
If you're a homeowner, don't try to be the pioneer. Find the designer who already has the factory relationships and the logistics infrastructure. The money you save on furniture will more than cover their fee, and you'll avoid the mistakes that turn a 6-month project into an 18-month headache.
The process exists. The factories exist. The savings are real. It's just a question of whether you're willing to be methodical about it. Here's the thing I keep coming back to. All of this, the factory visits, the spec sheets, the third-party inspections, it's a system built around human expertise. But what happens when the AI design tools and the 3D scanning get good enough that you can scan a room in Jerusalem, tweak a design in a browser, and send it directly to a CNC router in Foshan without anyone getting on a plane?
That's the design to factory question, and it's closer than most people think. You've already got platforms where you upload a 3D model and get instant quotes from multiple factories. The scanning piece, walking through a room with your phone and generating a millimeter accurate model, that's basically here. Apple's LiDAR sensors, photogrammetry apps, they're not perfect yet, but they're getting incrementally better every year.
The interior designer's role shifts from person who flies to China and touches fabrics to person who builds the digital twin and writes the spec sheet. The factory relationship becomes a software relationship.
I think that's partly true, but not entirely. The tactile stuff we talked about, foam density, leather hand feel, the weight of a drawer pull, none of that digitizes easily. You can't scan for, this sofa feels cheap. There's a sensory layer that still requires a human, at least for the first prototype. But the repeat orders? Once you've approved a spec, the reorder is a button.
The other piece that's already happening is the white label shift. Chinese factories are increasingly offering their own designs, fully developed pieces that can be customized with different materials, finishes, dimensions. It's not quite custom and not quite catalog. It's a middle category where the factory says, here's our sofa frame, pick your fabric, pick your leg finish, we'll build it in 8 weeks.
That blurs the line in a way that's actually great for the client. You're not paying a design development fee. The factory has already prototyped it, stress-tested it, and shipped it to 50 clients in Europe. You're getting a proven product with customization options, and the cost is closer to catalog pricing than true custom.
The question Hannah might be asking in 5 years isn't, how do I source custom furniture from China, but which platform do I use to send my room scan to a factory network? The middleman doesn't disappear, it just becomes software.
The factories that survived that shift are the ones that invested in the CNC routers and the climate-controlled finishing rooms we talked about. The ones with dust on the floor and no dust collection, they're not integrating with anyone's API. The quality factories become nodes in a global manufacturing network. The bad ones stay on Alibaba selling to people who don't know better.
Which is probably the right note to end on. The process we described works today. The design to factory future is coming, but the fundamentals, precise specs, factory vetting, independent inspection, those don't change. The interface changes. The discipline doesn't.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, Greenlandic settlers attempting to cultivate heritage barley varieties discovered that one traditional Scandinavian landrace required approximately 11,000 square feet of growing space to produce a single barrel of flour, roughly the footprint of two modern suburban houses to fill one standard barrel.
That's a lot of real estate for a loaf of bread.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear host. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.